Hello and welcome to Bad Boy Cinema. I am your host, Rick Reel. And once again, I have my perfectly adequate co-host, Elliot Film, in the studio with me. Elliot, how are you?
I'm perfectly adequate. As previously
stated. I feel like I was being too nice in the previous intros where I'm like, oh yeah.
You're too great. Nice. Okay, yeah.
So
I thought you meant too nice to you beforehand. You're like, I was hyping myself up a little bit. But to me,
I just wanted to keep it even handed, mm-hmm. which is a new concept for me.
Yeah, you're learning. Yeah,
I'm learning that skill. I'm a little shy about it.
And that's fine. It's good to have skills. And maybe one day we'll someone who share teaches some. Skills. Maybe a website who teaches skills will share some money with us. I'll say
who's
that.
To say? Maybe. I'm just going to do something new. Ooh. A little diet soda pop.
Got a little bottle.
Not going to say the name because no. They're not paying us, but it's a classic. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Great.
This week's episode of Bad Boy Cinema, we have Oppenheimer
released in
2023, as described by Wikipedia as an epic biological drama film.
That's not
which
what that
is a mouthful. And
epic biographical drama film.
Did I say biblical?
No, you said biological, which is are you okay?
Dude, yeah, maybe I can't read.
This classic soda that you were having might be one of the oldest sodas, let's say.
I wish. Oh, man, what a treat that would be for myself as well as the audience. But, okay, Oppenheimer, released in 2023, directed by, once again, our friend Christopher N., starring Cillian Murphy, Emily Blunt, Matt Damon, Josh from Drake and Josh.
Josh from Josh Hartnett,
the guy Iron Man is
from Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
The guy who was Han Solo in the Solo movie, though I don't think he's actually, not that he's uncredited, but he's not like he's a big character in the movie, and they don't like say that's who he is, and I don't think he has like a name.
Yeah, they don't say Han Solo Senate Star Wars. They just
they don't. They're like, screw that guy. Well, Josh Peck's here, but you know, who's Han Solo? You know.
Yeah, sure.
Josh anyway, Peck, this was my second time watching the film, and I believe this was your first. You did not catch it in the theater.
I intentionally did not catch it in the theater.
You're like, I'm sorry, I'm pledging my allegiance to Barbie.
I did pledge my allegiance to Barbie, and I stand by it. Having now seen both films, I made the right choice.
I disagree.
Look, I was shamed a lot. I was shamed a lot at the time. Like, you have to see this film in 70 millimeter IMAX. It's hyper important that you really understand the scope of this cinematic experience. And then I watched it. I'm like, this is just a bunch of white dudes being like, oh, I'm a tortured soul. You don't get it. You don't get it's just, I know you love this poor little meow meow all over the place. But for me, I was like, this is just, they're just sad at their own being. You're just sad for their own.
I mean, really, the only person who was sad was our friend Oppie.
I mean,
like about their own things that they did, being like specifically the poor little meow meow character archetype. Yeah, which I'm not going to explain in detail. You just have to know what that means. I'm sorry.
it's a comment. Go to film school. You'll get it.
You'll get it. You know, I mean,
they're talking
we
about
we can't explain everything to you guys, right? We're the experts. We have the podcast. You have to kind of take our word for things. because that's what being an expert is. We just say things unilaterally and you believe it because we're on the mic, you know, we're on the air and you're not.
$45 for this microphone. So what have you done lately?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you're not explaining what a poor little meow meow is, and I'm not either. You know, you can look that up.
Go to film school.
But Oppie is really the only poor little meow meow in the movie because everyone else.
Iron Man's a bit of a poor little meow meow.
No, he's a big baby.
He's absolutely a big baby.
He's a big baby. He got brushed off by Albert Einstein.
Like that destroyed him.
Yeah, no, it's like it's the equivalent of like walking past somebody in the hallway, giving them a head nod, and they don't do that back. And then you think about it for like 5 years.
Yeah.
Or however long the time difference was. But he thinks about it forever and
it ruins his life.
Yeah. Which, you know, can't say that I found that relatable, but, you know.
That's certainly a type of guy.
But he's not a poor little man. And what's really funny is having watched the beginning, like watched the movie, having, you know, seen it before and knowing, like, because I'm not necessarily, I wasn't, as we have discussed before, cryogenesis during the events of this movie. We were on ice, so we didn't know the historical figures, maybe. Now, could we have read about it? Sure, but we didn't live through it. And so I didn't know who this Lewis Strauss character
Strauss.
Was. Strauss. But why is it spelled Strauss? Why is it spelled Strauss?
Because he thinks that he's cool for being Strauss.
Strauss. Mm.
He thinks that gives him Southern charm.
I don't think there's anything Southern about that guy.
No, but it's like, I don't know. It's like being like a championship bodybuilder and you're just like, I got a fucking book tattoo just to be a well-rounded individual, you know, like doesn't mean anything. He's just doing it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Is that?
No, not at all. I'm not following. But anyway,
the slightest nod to a kind of guy. That's the opposite of what you are. And then you tell people you're well-rounded.
I feel like I do that.
Yeah. Yeah. You but don't I am say. Well,
I, anyway. I'm not, he's not literally me. I'm literally Oppenheimer. Clearly, if you've watched the movie, I'm more of a tortured soul than just like a big petty crybaby who's hung up on something from like 4 or 5 years ago and hasn't gotten over it. But anyway, in the beginning of the movie, you know, Strauss is explaining that, you know, he said hey to Albert Einstein and Albert Einstein didn't give him the time of day. And he goes to Oppenheimer and he's like, oh, what was that about? Like, what'd you tell him? And Oppenheimer's like, he'll be fine. And the context of that is they had like an incredibly depressing conversation about how the world is like forever changed and is going to be like, you know, under the heel of like nuclear, you know, deterrence essentially forever, right? Yeah. But then he's just like, he'll get over it. He's fine.
It's fine. Give him a day.
Yeah.
Which, like, realistically, why didn't you just give him a day and say what up to him tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, or like, I guess maybe he doesn't run into Albert Einstein that much.
Didn't they all hang out
in the same place? I didn't really understand that they were on this like little campus for science guys.
Yeah, they were at, instead of space camp, it was blow up camp.
It was old man science camp.
Yeah.
No, that bomb camp was in the middle of the movie, which in my opinion, the middle where they're just like making the bomb is kind of it's kind of boring. Like the middle hour is not particularly compelling because the build up before they go to Los Alamos, cool. You know, the aftermath of everything, cool. The part where they're like can we make the bomb? It's like, yeah, you can. Like, we know you did it. Movie also wouldn't make any sense if you couldn't do it. Like, you made the bomb. Like, we know.
Yeah.
We don't have to belabor that.
Hydrogen. You're like, I don't fucking
know. No, I don't think that's what, I don't know.
You're the scientist.
I'm pretty sure there were atomic bombs when we dropped them. Even though I wasn't there for it, but you know.
Yeah. It's just like, I got annoyed. Every single character is like annoying.
Really?
They're their own annoying guy, in my opinion.
Well, I know why you find annoying about Oppenheimer.
It's because he's a communist and he won't admit it.
He won't admit anything. He basically is like, I'm not going to give you any opinion about anything.
Am I a communist? No, who's to say?
He's like, who is it going to get me laid? Then sure, if it'll get my security clearance revoked.
I did.
Then no. I mean, it's that easy. I'll say whatever. I think
that it was funny that he's like this. He's the most powerful mind on Earth at the time, and his one weakness is BPD pussy.
Yeah,
like me. I get it.
Same. Yeah.
But yeah, I was like, I was annoyed with.
Well, look at later in the film where
they're like, at his own. He's like, "What if we did this? Wouldn't that be like? Look, I'm gonna amass every genius on Earth. I'm gonna convince them to do this, and then they do it." And he's like, "Guys, why'd we do it?"
So you can make a bomb, but you can't set it off. It's like, well, I mean, what else are you gonna do with it? Just sit on it? Like, that's what it's for. I mean, I kind of get it, because it's like, I think the point of building the bomb is saying, hey, we have this, so no one can fight wars anymore. And people go like, well, what if we just build our own, and then what? And then it's like, oh. And then that's when a lot of Metal Gear Solid themes come into play, which I'm not going to get into, but
sure,
you know, fans of the show will know about, you know, MGS5, you know, nuclear deterrence. You're trying to disarm, you know, all the nukes for the special cutscene. Anyway.
Yeah, to me it read as very oh no, the consequences of my own actions. But I will say, now I did not like this movie. Did not like a single character. I will say, absolutely shout out the sound design team. You kind of killed it.
I mean
the sound design was kind of sick.
The music was good.
Yeah, Ludwig. Ludwig goes crazy.
Ludwig was really firing on all cylinders.
I've been a big Ludwig fan since like 2010, I would say.
Yeah, I like the stomping sounds, like the you know when something's happening and where he's like getting a little like anxiety, like panic attacky.
Yeah,
yeah.
And then you're like, whoa, it's like a celebratory thing, but then there's like sad violin music, and it's like, dude,
we've never said that Chris Nolan.
And then the bomb goes off and it's silent and he's just breathing. You're like, whoa, dude, sound design.
It is cool. Like, it is pretty sick.
I'm saying it in a sarcastic voice, but I was kind of like, this is cool.
No, and like, you missed out experiencing that in the theater, because I think that aspect of the movie like is pretty cool.
I have a very nice sound system, I'll say.
But like the scale of the bomb stuff was cool on it.
I mean, we've all seen nuclear bombs.
I think we've not all seen nuclear bombs. What are you talking about? We've seen video. I mean, which is what also what the movie is, right?
But yeah.
You know, and seeing it in theaters was cool. That's all I'm gonna say. It was a cool spectacle. Sure.
I believe that. I would not pay $37 for that experience, but you know,
I mean, I'm sure it was fine. I paid like 13, but you know.
Okay, we live in different.
Yeah. Economies. Okay, you live in a dump, and I live in the good place where.
Yeah, you know, I live. Money is
free.
I live in a place where we import digital products and then upcharge them because they're imported.
Good. Maybe that's how it should be.
It shouldn't be that way, but you know, whatever. I'm not a communist like Oppie over here. I don't look. I don't really know what the message of the film was. Like, I do, but
no, like, it's pretty obvious. I think that,
like, I get
Chris Ann is like not a fan of the bomb.
Yeah.
I think he thinks it's bad.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair to say.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what he's trying to say about communism.
I don't think he's saying anything about it. I think that's just referenced as part of communism
existed at the time.
I think communism is strictly a plot point. I don't think he has. I mean, he didn't like come at it like it's bad. Like he's pretty sympathetic. I mean, the way that, you know, the movie portrays Oppenheimer and the other communists, it seems sympathetic to what they're doing. So I don't think, you know, famous conservative filmmaker Chris N. I'm saying that sarcastically, had, you know, at worst, he has zero thoughts about communism at all. They're just,
I don't think he has any thoughts about politics at all.
I agree. He's, I mean, it's funny to make a movie like Oppenheimer be like, he's famously apolitical.
yeah.
But
like, truly, I don't think that I think he is privileged enough that he has never had to think about it at all.
Yeah.
You're like, what if like we weren't racist to people? It's like, all right, sounds fine. Do I have to do anything? That's the kind of guy Chris
Anderson. He's like, cool, I'm already not racist to people, so I'm just gonna keep doing my thing and y'all can figure it out.
Yeah. Which is not really what you want to.
No, but
he's an artist.
Also, like, I mean, I don't know if this is true to like the real Oppenheimer or not, but I like that, you know. They're like, what should we do with Los Alamos? Like, after you know they did the bomb, right? And you know they're going to work on the hydrogen bomb or whatever. When he's talking to Truman, which I like that scene in general, but Oppenheimer's like, we'll give it back to the Indians. They're like, what are you crazy? No, we're not going to do that. Like, we might make war bombs.
Yeah,
we might make it an even bigger place, but we're not giving it back to the Indians.
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah, that's true to life, I'm sure.
No, I mean, yeah, for sure. But it's funny that they just like they let him be like,
yeah,
he's kind of woke in like this sort of after the fact, like
he did try and woke him up. He did try and woke him up a bit.
Yeah,
so I don't believe that the guy who invented the nuclear bomb really cared about anybody. And I know that's the point of the movie is that actually he did care and he made a big old oopsie.
Yeah, he went.
Well, he made like a 5-year long oopsie or whatever, but
sometimes you just get really focused on something and you just end up doing it and you're like, oh, I maybe ought not to have done that afterward, you know, kind of that moment of clarity. And in the whole time he's also just dealing with the communist BPD, you know.
Yeah,
I'll see, and that'll really do a number on you. So I'm
saying, yeah, imagine if he didn't have 80% of his brain focused on BPD pussy. How good would the bomb be?
He just wouldn't have made the bomb. He would be like, oh, I don't need to do this.
Maybe this was ill-advised.
Yeah, I think that is really so. It's Florence Pugh's fault, the whole thing.
Sure.
I think that is kind of, I mean, she is that character is pivotal to Oppenheimer's story. And I think that's what Christopher Nolan was actually trying to say. Mm-hmm. Not that her, you know, demise, you know, kind of partially fueled, you know, his drive to finish the bomb. But you
know. Who's to say?
So you thought every character was annoying?
Yeah, pretty much. I didn't enjoy anything. I will.
In like Huey from The Boys playing his bongos at every opportunity.
No.
I thought that was a very weird decision. Like they're like, oh hey, it's Huey from The Boys. And then like when they first introduced the character, they're like recruiting him into the project. And then every other scene it's just him playing his bongos, like having a good time. I'm like, what In the book, if I read the Oppenheimer book, which I'm not going to, but if I did, is there going to be a recurring character who's just like going to town on the bongos? I doubt it. So like, what did Huey from The Boys go, hey, I'm going to, you know, is that
yeah, his name, just right? Having fun. Sure. I will to be a little cinematic here to flex my dropped out of film school cred. What's with the black and white? What are you doing?
Well, that was explained.
Like, I get it.
You looked it up. You looked what Chris N said, where the color is like from Oppenheimer's perspective of things, and then black and white is like the more objective perspective. I kind of viewed it more as like just the.
You go ahead.
It would have been easier to just be like, oh, the black and white's from Straw's perspective.
That's what I saw when I looked it up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how it plays out. Chris N specifically said that it was like a subjective versus objective thing. And I don't know if I necessarily, like, I know he's the guy who made the movie. And so I don't think like in practice watching the movie, it doesn't really.
Yeah.
I think if you saw the screenplay and then, cause apparently the screenplay, the colored parts are written in a first person perspective from Oppenheimer, which is something you don't really do with screenplays. Yeah. And so I think if you read the screenplay like that and then watched the movie, like with that context, then I think maybe that would make more sense. But for somebody who has not read the screenplay, cause I'm just a guy then, you know, there's cat drama outside.
What I saw was that the black and white is from Straw's perspective, and he has like this black and white objective kind of perception of the world.
Yeah. Except that being just a little petty bastard.
Yeah.
Because Einstein didn't say hi to him, and then Oppenheimer like roasted him.
Yeah,
this is like, very Oppenheimer seems like kind of a fun hang, you know. I get why.
I mean, at certain points, at other points, he's not that fun. He's a bit of a little bitch when he like shakes that guy's hand. You're like, what are you doing?
Betty Softy's character.
Sure. Yeah.
At the end, the like vaguely foreign guy who was building the hydrogen bomb and was like kind of a kind of a dick that also like didn't do anything the whole movie. A lot of the scientists were weird.
Yeah, I think that's true to life.
Yeah, I mean, right. But like it just in the movie, I'm like, I get that you had to be there because like you were there. But like, did we need Josh Peck? You know?
Yeah.
Who was Josh Peck supposed to be?
It's just Josh Peck, brother. Yeah.
Where was Drake? They should have gotten Drake. Drake Bell should have been the Senate aide, you know, so there would have been that kind of. You know,
yeah,
because you can't have Josh without Drake.
Oppenheimer.
No, Drake Bell should have been Huey from The Boys and just playing the bongos, but he could have been playing the guitar, and that would have made more sense.
Sure. But my point to finally get to it, the black and white, it's supposed to have this artistic meaning of something. Is it some objective or truthful or Straw's perspective or whatever? That's not coming across to me in my brain. When I see that, I go, oh, that's black and white again. And I'm just like, technically in the studio, they made this black and white. And I'm not thinking of what that artistically means, which is why I looked it up. I'm just like, oh, there's.
Well, that might be a you problem. Like clearly I'm like, oh, well he's up to something when he's doing this. So like, what could that be?
I know that he's up. I don't think that they're just like, what if we made this black and white for no reason? I know that they're doing something, but the intent is there, but what actually comes across to me is I'm like, oh, you've now made it black and white. Oh, now it's color. Cool.
So you're just having thoughts about what's happening in front of you. Like I don't
like it's taking me out of the story. It's not accomplishing what it sets out to, in my opinion.
So I think the way I'm kind of seeing it, if we can tie it back to our previous episode on The Prestige, right? Sure. Where that movie is also shot wildly out of order as far as like the scenes are, you know, shown to us out of order. I don't know how they shot the film. Who cares? But there's clearly like a past and present sort of like storylines that are kind of like switching back and forth kind of. And I think that's kind of the same thing that he's doing with this, but he just coded them
yeah.
to be black and white for part of it. And then occasionally he also doesn't follow that rule and sometimes they're in color.
Yeah.
So, but I wonder if you were to like edit the movie and he just took all the color scenes and he jammed all those together and then all the black and white scenes and jammed those together, if that would even be remotely coherent.
They're probably not. I'm going to say no.
I think it could, I think if you did all the color ones and you might have to like kind of shift things around a little bit, but I think you could, I think you can make it work. I'm not going to try, but
that's fine. Yeah. I've black and white and color switching back and forth has worked in films. I'm not saying it's a bad technique, but I didn't get what the message was, which is why I had to look it up. And it just takes me out of the film when I'm just like, okay, it's black and white. Okay, it's color. Like, I'm noticing technique before artistic intent. I don't think it was done well.
I mean, you could say that, but I don't understand. You're like, noticing that the color grade of the movie is changing. That's, I mean, of like, course you're noticing it, like, because you're seeing it and then it's in your brain. Like, I don't.
But that's what's standing out to me. Not like, oh, this is an objective part of the movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you're probably not going to figure out exactly what's going on your first go of it as far as like why it's changing like that. But you can clearly go,
for being a 3-hour film, I should be able to figure out what's going on the first.
No, I mean, like, well, I mean, yeah, the shot, you know what I'm saying? I get it. It sounds like you're like, I'm confused by the concept of colors changing. That's what it sounds
like. I'm not confused by it. I'm just saying when you have this artistic intent to show a specific perspective, that's not coming across.
Well, I mean, I agree the subjective objective thing. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but I was, for me, was able to go, oh, the black and white stuff is more about straws than like it's straws.
I mean, content, like, yeah, I gathered that.
Yeah, but I mean, I got that. I got to there pretty quickly. I didn't go, what's all this black and white stuff?
I didn't say, no, what's this all about? I'm just saying that
you had to look it up. So, I mean, you know.
Well, I chose to look it up because I care about research and a high quality product at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I didn't look at what Chris Ann said about it, but, you know, I saw what other people were saying.
This movie had only $100 million budget. That's crazy. Sorry.
Yeah. Imagine what we could do with $100 million. It's just dudes talking. Like, 80% of this budget is goddamn Iron Man.
Yeah, I'm sure that making a miniature version of the atomic bomb going off was probably...
That's true. It was a practical effect, though.
Which is cool.
And some credit.
He likes his practical effects, and they're kind of sick.
Yeah, respect for setting off a small nuclear bomb for a film. That's sick.
I mean, he's a cool guy, I think. I think Chris N kind of rules.
Yeah. Speaking of Chris N, we can discuss his, for whatever reason, he's doing like a press tour right now, I guess for the Oscars. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it also might be like because all the strikes and stuff that were going on when the movie came out,
right?
That might have
now
had limited his ability to do things. I don't know, but yeah, he is talking.
Yeah, good for him, dude. He's dispelling his entire character that the people have thrust upon him.
Yeah, that you thrust upon him specifically.
I did call him. What did I call him? A frat boy filmmaker?
I mean, I think that is still true. Auteur. He's just, I think he's still, that's not a bad description though.
No.
Like that's a cool guy.
I stand by it.
No, but you were complaining about him being pretentious.
And he is.
I don't think he's, I think he's a chill guy.
He's a little narcissistic and he's a little holier than thou. And that's not true.
Are
just
you sure
me.
You're talking about Chris Ed and not somebody else?
Some of Chris Ed's fans, perhaps.
Who's to say?
It's not just me deciding who this guy is in my head and being mad at him. I'm watching his work. As you can see, we're breaking it down right now. I'm discussing genuine concerns. We did it last week. And I've also seen interviews where our good friend Iron Man, Robbie DJ, that's his name, right? Robbie DJ?
Yeah, Robbie DJ.
He will talk about Chris N and explain the way that he is as a person. And it backs up all the things that I've been saying. And then Chris N comes out and he's like, actually, Vin Diesel's the best actor of all time. I'm like, okay, what are you, an actor now? You just lie? Who wrote this fucking script? You and your brother? Vin Diesel, put him in your goddamn movie then. I love Fast and the Furious. Okay. How come Paul Walker?
He's just
dead?
A chill guy. Imagine Chris N directing a Fast and Furious movie, though. I think that would be super cool. There would be no cars. No one would drive.
They're like, we're in space now. And then he's like, we're not in space anymore. We're doing time travel because he fucking loves playing with time in his movies, dude. Watch any Chris N movie.
He does. Like, he does love time.
There's like 15 seconds of clock face in that. Any fucking Chris N movie just shows you a goddamn clock and you're like, whoa, what does this say about society?
So what was the clock in Oppenheimer? Just the countdown to the bomb going off?
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of clock.
I feel like there's a clock in this movie. He just loves
Oppenheimer was hanging clock, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Jake.
I'll allow it.
How funny is it where he says when he says I've become death, the destroyer of worlds?
Yeah.
And he's mid bang of Florence. That's crazy. I laughed out loud in the theater so hard. It was so funny.
Yeah.
I was like, is Chris N like being silly right now? Like, is he doing a bit? Cause I can't really justify this any other way other than like, oh, he's having a bit of a laugh. Cause he knows that line has to be in the movie, but he's like, I'm going to do something a little silly.
Yeah. It's hard to know how silly he is.
I think he's a silly guy. I think he's
operating on a different level than everybody else. So him being silly, like maybe all of his pretentious airs that he has is just being a little silly, you know? It's like, what has a bit?
I just put time travel in every one of my movies.
Yeah.
That's a little silly. He's got to know. He's like, I've done time travel again, but what if I do a movie where it like plays forwards and backwards? Like, I think Tenet was just like, I'm not even saying this ironically. I think Tenet is a movie where he is kind of just doing a subversive bit for the whole movie. Cause that's the only way the movie I think is like redeemable, is that he's on purpose he's being silly.
And we'll find out one day when we do Tenet.
Not anytime soon. I don't want to watch Tenet.
Yeah. I don't know. That's most of my thoughts on this film is I don't like it. I found it very annoying. And I don't know. It feels like he's pushing me to be sympathetic for people that I don't care about.
That's what movies are. What are you talking about?
But I'm supposed to care about the people. Make me care about these characters.
I mean,
it feels like he didn't try. It's like, this is a movie about the guy who, like,
I'm sorry, this movie
realistically, realistically,
if Oppenheimer was a little trash robot guy who just made little silly sounds, you'd be like, oh, this is a great movie.
Absolutely. Look, you want to hate on WALL-E, that's fine. WALL-E is a movie.
I'm not hating on WALL-E.
You want to say it's the worst movie of all time? That's fine. That's your opinion.
I'm not saying that.
Look, WALL-E, in the production design of WALL-E, first of all, number one, they're like, we got to make the robot cute. Second, they're like, he's got to have a sidekick. What's the hardest thing to make cute and adorable? A little cockroach. It's his best friend. You know what? I love that cockroach. Okay. That cockroach gets it, dude.
And so you're saying like John Lasseter should have like redesigned Oppenheimer or given him a little animal companion? Is that
I'm just saying.
Are those your notes? I don't.
That movie has heart. It has a beautiful story. And for a kid's movie, the first like 38 minutes, there's no dialogue. That's crazy. It's an artistic masterpiece to be able to pull that off and still be appealing to kids. That's like, that takes a genuine amount of skill. I don't know who this movie is appealing to other than people who want to cheer on the guy who built the bomb and then feel sad for the guy after the bomb goes off. Like, I don't get who it's appealing to. It's just dudes talking about their fucking
you're just
ego.
Describing movies I like, and you're like, I don't get who would possibly like this.
I know. It's just a bunch of guys with big egos being like, you know, Albert Einstein didn't say what's up to me. Just talk to him tomorrow, dude. He didn't even look. He probably didn't know you were there. He's busy. He's got a lot on his mind. I don't know if you know this. He's Albert goddamn Einstein. Yeah, sure, he did the theory of relativity 40 years ago, but like, he's still Albert. He's got a lot of thoughts going on, brother.
Yeah, but he wasn't sticking his tongue out, you know, and doing that silly face. You know,
yeah, exactly. If he was sticking his tongue out and doing a silly face, and I was like,
that's
hey,
how
what's
you know
up,
thinking.
What's
that's
up, LB? And he ignored me. I'd be like, yo, dude, you're having fun right now, and you're not going to say hi. But if he's like, you know, he's lost in his own thoughts. He's just feeding ducks at the pond. Obviously, he's in his own head to an insane degree. Just fucking relax, dude. Just text him tomorrow.
You seem like the kind of person who's like, this person made like an emotional decision in a movie that isn't perfectly logical. And now you're like upset. They're like, it doesn't make any sense why they would do that.
No, I get it. I get it. I make poor decisions all the time. This podcast, horrible decision. But I'm just saying, if all your characters constantly make bad decisions and then I'm supposed to feel bad for them, that's not going to happen. You have no redeeming qualities.
That's what Euphoria is all about. And people love that show. All they do is make bad decisions.
About BPD pussy also. I've never seen it.
In a lot of ways, there's a lot of parallels between Oppenheimer and Euphoria.
Okay, next week we'll do season one of Euphoria.
No. I mean, I don't know. I don't have time to rewatch it, but we could do season one of Euphoria later. Yeah, I don't think you would like it. I think you'd be like, these people are terrible.
Yeah,
except for Hunter Schafer, who is like, she's fine.
I watched a show recently and I was like, I almost don't want to finish it because all the characters are making stupid decisions.
And what's the show?
It was Sharp Objects on HBO.
Oh yeah. The thing that Ryan Seacrest told me about years ago.
Ryan Seacrest told you about it?
Yeah.
Your close personal friend, Ryan S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ryan S. told me all about it.
I mean, like, it's a decent show. I liked it. I didn't love it, but I liked it. All the characters, I was like, what are you doing? What do you mean you're taking Oxycontin with your 13-year-old sister? Don't do that. You're an adult.
Oh, yeah. You would hate Euphoria then. If this is your like thought process, you'd be like, what are these kids doing? They're making terrible choices.
I mean, when you're 13, do Oxycontin. I don't care. That's your life. But if you're 30... and your 13-year-old sister is like, you want to do Oxycontin with me? No. You say no. You say, thank you very much. I'm going to go to bed. Have a good night. You know? You handle your own business. I'll handle mine. never the twain shall meet, you know.
Never the twain.
Never the twain shall meet. That's a phrase.
I don't know.
Look it up. It's in a Christopher N movie. Anyway, Ludwig Göransson killed it. Love your work. If you're listening, come on the show. Talk about producing Camp, the Childish Gambino album. Love to talk to you about Camp. I don't know. That's it. I've gone on several.
Did you think the acting was good?
The acting was good. I think
any Oscar nods, any you know.
Yeah, sure. Maybe Killian, some flowers. I think that towards the end, when Strauss was really
melting down,
getting in trouble. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it got a little overdone at that point. Not just
he was a little upset. Yeah, I kind of in the theater, I was like, wow, this is good. And then I watched it this morning on my laptop. I was like, no, this is a little silly.
Yeah. like everybody's kind of getting a baby. yeah. Everyone was a little bit over invested at that point, I think.
Yeah.
But you know, the first 2 hours of the film, sure. I don't know if I was like
Mr. Robot came in at the end, you know.
Yeah. He didn't need to be there.
Save the day.
You know, love to the Egyptian peoples, but Rami Malek did not need to be in this film.
I thought he was great. I love Egypt and its people.
I mean, like, we just watched like 2.5 hours of this story, and then he's just like, by the way, you remember what happened? Remember fucking they built
an anime recap. That's first of all, that's not how that happened, but even if it was,
I mean,
it is funny to do an anime recap in the like last hour of your own movie.
Yeah,
because it's like, I know you idiots aren't paying attention, so let's go.
Yeah, unnecessary, in my opinion. He didn't need to be there at all. Robbie DJ was a little bit out of control. Mm-hmm. I would have cut probably, I would say you could easily cut 45 minutes from this film.
Yeah, I would just cut kind of like the middle part.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what's tension is there of if they're going to build the bomb? They built it. Once he goes into some weird like alternative history, like it's like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but then like he doesn't build the bomb.
And then, like, and then somebody else builds the bomb, puts his name on it.
Until someone builds a bigger bomb.
Hmm? So true.
Until someone builds a bigger podcast.
Not going to happen.
Until someone builds a batter boy in cinema.
yeah. Well,
that's going on the Twitter.
Look, do not build a batter boy cinema in my lifetime. If I'm dead...
Sure.
I don't care what Rick Reel is up to. Shadow Rick Reel can do whatever he wants. But if I'm dead, you can make a batter boy cinema. Until then, cool it. Trying out a new catchphrase. What do you think?
Cool it? That's a catchphrase?
Yeah. Until then, cool it.
Is that how you're going to end the episode? You're just going to tell the audience to cool it, or are you just telling me to cool it?
I mean,
I'm chilling, man.
Yeah, the audience. I think it should be hyped up, dude. Get hyped up.
Get hyped up when we're about to end the episode in like a minute.
Yeah, maintain your hype until next week.
What are we reviewing next week? Because I don't know.
I don't know. You want to do Salt?
Not particularly.
Okay. If you have a suggestion for what we should review next week, email us at badboycinemafanmail@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We will figure it out. I'll put it in the description once we figure out what we're recording next week.
So you guys
watch it ahead of time.
you can watch a not a long, but
yeah. Form your own thoughts and then be dismayed as we disagree.
Yeah. Whatever your opinion is on, and then in post-production, we're going to edit in what we're saying right now. So the name of the movie, you know, you're wrong. And we're right. Even if both of us don't agree with each other.
Yeah. We can both be right, even if we have opposing views.
But you can't be.
I think Oppenheimer was really bad. Rick Reel thinks it was really good. And we're both correct. But whatever opinion you have on the film, you're not a professional.
Yeah. See, now we're cooking.
Now we're we gotta re-record this bad boy now that we know what we're talking about. All right. Until next time, cool it.